Parenting on Moncrief, thanks to Five Rivers Fostering, providing 24-hour support for foster parents and children. FiveRiversFostering.ie.
Coleman Nocter, child and adolescent psychoanalytic psychotherapist. That is very hard to say, Cormac, may I just point out. Join us now to go through your questions sent in for the parenting slot. If you have further questions, email afternoon@newstalk.ie. Cormac, how are you?
Good, thanks, Tom. How are you?
Very well indeed. Glued to half of these. I think once you have a child in your life, there's never an area where you aren't curious as to what other parents do.
Yeah, I think as a parent, you stumble upon lots of these dilemmas many times over your child's life. So either looking back on how you could have done it differently or giving yourself a pat on the back for how you did it well is always an interesting
thing. I wish it was pat on the back territory, but it's more, I feel like you stumble through things.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I think we're sold this notion that you can do this perfectly. And, you know, there's books and ways and methods and new different ways in which you can be the perfect parent. Parenting essentially is, and it might be unpopular, but it's essentially a task of failure, and it's trying to manage that failure as best you can, because if you try and do it perfectly, the amount of pressure and stress that you put yourself under, you're going to stumble for sure then.
So that's your starting point today, a task of failure. Write that down. It's the first thing you need to write down. This is our first one today. It's a listener says, I'm a single mum and I'm not in a relationship. It's just me and my daughter, who's 4.5 years old. She's the light of my life and I adore her. My daughter's father and I were not in a serious relationship when I got pregnant. He did not feel prepared to be her father. He met her once when she was a baby and he made the decision to remain anonymous and out of her life. My daughter therefore has grown up with no daddy. When she asks me why she does not have a daddy, I explain to her that there are many different types of families, and this has been fine up to now. Recently, the subject comes up a lot more, and I feel she needs to know more. What is the best way to tell her, yes, you do have a biological daddy, but he does not want or know how to be a daddy, and he does not want to be one at the moment? What is the best thing to tell her, sticking to the truth and not hurting her or painting this man in a bad light?
Yeah, unfortunately, I mean, this is a situation I'd come across a lot, but I suppose not at the point of when you're telling somebody or a child is asking. There's no easy way to resolve this issue. It may resurface many times over this child's life. Her child is now 4, so the questions are starting. 4 to 7 is that time where you question everything and why and what. And introducing a child to reality is the task of childhood. So childhood is the introduction to reality gradually. So the pacing of how you introduce reality to a child is incredibly important on whether that child reacts positively or negatively to it. But in something like her genealogy, it's not something I would be keen to fudge or create white lies or too many fantasies about. According to her age, you need to edit and give her a hybrid version of the truth. But I would tend to go with the truth as that. And, you know, whether that's he wasn't ready to be a father or he lived far away or whatever it might be, you may re-emphasize elements of the story that make it more palatable. But the most important thing is that this child comes away from that conversation knowing it was nothing about her.
Okay.
And that is the difficulty. I've treated a lot of teenagers who wouldn't have known a parent, and some will be deeply upset by it, and they will, you know, scan crowds looking for somebody of that age profile, constantly wondering, is that my dad or whatever it might be. Other young people will deny having much of that upset at all and have gotten on with their lives and felt, you know, that their parents, their other parents were loved or their grandparents were around and didn't have that. So everyone will react differently to it. But for the child who feels that something they did caused their parents to leave, and it may be the furthest thing from the truth, but if that gets stuck in there, it is a really difficult. And if you don't give an explanation, or if you give an explanation that sounds fantastical and unbelievable, the child will make up their own reality. And oftentimes their own reality is one that is far more damaging to their self-worth and their sense of who they are than the actual one.
Okay.
So, and again, I suppose there will be some of the listenership that will disagree with that and say, 4, it's too young. But I think a hybrided, edited version of the truth. I know lots of teenagers who, I've never met a teenager who gives out that they knew too much or they were told too honest an explanation. I've met lots of teenagers who get really furious at being lied to, according to their backgrounds, whether that's through adoption or whatever it might be. And so I think honesty policy here.
Okay. There's a phrase there, though, that jars me a bit, and that's of painting this man in a bad light. That strikes me as a dangerous...
It is. And it's something to be avoided. From the point of view of, no matter what your views and feelings about this man are, you need to bite your tongue. Your child at four will not know DNA and genetics, but they will know that I'm a bit part of my mum and I'm part of my dad. And that's just something they feel. Mm. If you're painting this man in a bad light and slating him at every opportunity, then half of me is bad, you know, in terms of that. And it's something that children very young can adapt a kind of a sense of. You know, if you're coming from a separated situation, even where the parent is known and the one is the victim of lots of bad mouthing and things like that, the child can't help but own that a little bit. What I would say is, and sometimes this can happen, is as the child gets older, they may kind of idolise their missing parent. And that's sometimes Freud talked about the family romance. It happens around seven when you become disillusioned with your own parents and they start to be fallible and you kind of think, my real parents will come and rescue me from these mishandling idiots at some point, and it's a kind of a fantasy. And other children who have an estranged parent may well say, you know, oh, my dad bought me these new shoes, even though that you worked off your hard-earned cash to buy them. And that's just them trying to get some sense of ownership over that identity.
Okay.
And it's important not to react to that and just allow that to happen. But the most important thing is try not to avoid this topic. Things like Father's Day and things can be really awkward and everyone's shuffling around. Ask the child, you know, do you miss not having a dad at this point in time? Get the support from your extended family, as I say, and use every resource you can. But the child needs to know that despite that parent not being around, they are absolutely loved unconditionally, and that there is absolutely no loss in their life because they have a system around them that really cares about them.
Okay. Next one is, my five-year-old will not listen to instruction. She is constantly doing naughty things and then repeats them again moments later while laughing. I have to say it's very frustrating for both of her parents. She loves my makeup and manages to climb her way up and get access to it. She'll then ruin it, break things, and has previously smashed lipstick or blush her into the carpet. I give out, scold her, do time out, and when punishment is over, she's right back at it again. For her dad, it's his Xbox, which is kept in our bedroom out of her reach. She gets the games and damages them with her sticky fingers, or she walks on them. Again, we punish her, but moments later, she's there laughing and throwing the disc in the air. I know she's five and we keep our cool, but it is incredibly frustrating. We need new techniques to deal with her and discipline her. Can you help, please? Sounds like an exorcism might be the best approach there.
I think it's really interesting that this child is going after makeup and Xbox, which, you know, are probably two things that are important to their parents.
Yeah.
We had a kid similar to this. We talked the last time we were on, where the child was taking car keys and passports. It was kind of something significant about leaving the house.
God, what's that say?
And hiding something that's important. And I think this is about attention. And, you know, why go after dad's Xbox games with her sticky fingers, etc., and mum's climbing high to just crush mum's blusher, not necessarily use it. And so there's something about a plea for attention in it. But I worry about the use of the word punishment. That's a word that I struggle with myself.
Okay.
I much prefer sanction or discipline. But when you're into punishment, I think it creates a problematic issue in terms of how you do it. When you're thinking about consequences, you've got to make them immediate and fair. So for this child who's testing and testing the boundary, the reaction to her doing something on a Friday evening when everyone is tired has to be the same as it is on a Saturday morning when everyone's rested. So the consistency is what will manage that level.
What do you do, though?
Behavior.
I mean, you say not to use the word punishment, so sanction.
Sanction. There's a behaviour, and then there's a cost to that.
Okay.
So if you misbehave.
Probably the removal of something she loves, which could be
possibly
sweet.
Possibly. Again, like the issue around, if you're trying to change a child's behaviour, many people use reward charts and stuff like that. But I would say 80% of people use them wrong. From the point of view, you select one behaviour that you want to manage. So if it's not taking mum's makeup, that's all you have to focus on. Not that you're going to become a wonderful child tomorrow in everything and we're going to sanction everything that you do, but just this one behaviour. So you make a list and preempt your responses rather than react. When you react, you're going to go, right, that's it.
Yeah.
Naughty step for 6 hours. And it's going to be, it's not realistic. It's not comparable or commensurate with the activity that they've just had. So you're trying to keep, you preempt the sanction before the occasion, just narrow it to one and make it an incentive-based issue. So for this child, and I think this description, this is a child who needs to be caught being good. So this is a child when they're actually managing and doing something well, that's when you heap the attention on them. The child, when she's being, in this case, taken the task for doing something, she does something straight away again. So something about the sanction is not working. So it might be when she's misbehaving, withdrawing attention from her, rather than that being the point at which she gets it. And when she's good, heaping the attention on her. When we have two children who are playing quietly in the next room, we kind of look in and go, geez, that's great, I'm going to get on with washing up or watching TV or whatever. That's the moment you got to be in with the two siblings who are normally fighting and saying, great to see you guys watching telly together or playing together.
And here is a little reward.
Absolutely. And make sure the reward is something that is sustainable and something that, that they can actually, it's an incentive base for them to behave better and one thing at a time.
Okay. Mika was saying you can get a load of blank CDs and leave them around the house. Hide the good ones. Obvious, no. Also, you can insure your games in the gaming shops. Just pay the extra £1 or whatever and then insure it. Problem solved. And then you can tell your kid for every time they damage the game, they must pay you the euro. Full of solutions today, me. This is Mika. And another listener on the child who doesn't, whose father isn't in their life. Does this child have a granddad with whom she could have a meaningful relationship? Might fill the void. Could do. And is the naughty 5-year-old about to start school? Maybe she's not ready to be one in the class, perhaps 30. Laughing when corrected would drive me nuts as a parent and a grandparent. Her lack of ability to pay attention seems typical of a younger child. Says that person. So this one, a 2-year-old is getting increasingly aggressive towards her older sister. It's more than the usual sibling conflicts over toys, etc. There are incidents of unprovoked slapping and kicking. Recently, the 2-year-old stuck her fork into her sister's face at dinner. This was the culmination of an afternoon where there were several incidents of kicking out and hitting. We've tried putting her on the bold step and firmly telling her no, but it makes no difference. Her aggressiveness towards her older sister is getting worse, and no sitting on the stairs or giving out works. We make her say sorry and she will hug her big sister afterwards, but it's like a game and she's doing it deliberately. The 2-year-old has a slight speech delay, and we've seen speech therapists at development checkups, but they say there's no need to worry. She doesn't have many words for her age, maybe around 15 to 20 words. The 2-year-old will copy everything the 5-year-old does and tries to emulate her as younger siblings tend to. The 5-year-old dotes on her younger sister and is very caring but doesn't stand up for herself. We've told her ways to stand up for herself, but it's not for her to be the parent here. There is something, this is something I don't want to see get out of hand. Any advice or guidance would be very welcome. A dad.
Yeah, first of all, I think we can get a little bit upset about using terms like aggression in toddlers. The issue with a two-year-old technically doesn't have a fully developed frontal cortex, so they don't have the capacity to cognitively think about emotion. So where we think, we feel, we do, the toddler just feels and does. The thinking piece is missing.
Okay.
And they wouldn't have a clear idea of how dangerous it is to stick a fork in someone. That could be like a toddler will hit someone with a metal truck over the head without any intentionality or capacity to make that.
Okay.
So let's take it as an age appropriate issue as well. But more, when you look at behavior like that, you're trying to look at what is the meaning behind the behavior. So is there something, is this child vying for the attention of the older sibling? So rather than call their name or say their name, you know, why not crash into them? They'll certainly get notice and turn around for that. Is there something in the response to the child when she misbehaves at this level that parents are responding in a way? But I'm really interested in is the speech delay issue. I mean, where words fail, actions take over. So if I do not have the words to explain how I feel, or I don't have the process to be able to even contemplate and think about how I feel, I will just do. And, you know, the kind of famous expression of the kind of, like it's not a word, but it's speaks to us about a highest level of frustration that we can reach. And, you know, if it is something that I'm trying to vie for attention at the table, or I'm trying to get my voice heard, I'm trying to express something, I will go to the extreme to make my point. And that can be really difficult. So there's it's to find the meaning behind the favour is the first important thing. The second thing is your older child deserves to live in their house free from being having forks stuck in them. And so it is about trying to protect them and support them. So when a child inflicts injury on the other one, it's where the attention goes, not so much in the sanction, but in the victim. So you're kind of overhamming the victim of the assault, if you want to make that analogy, and trying to get them to but what you're really trying to do here is give this child words. And it's difficult because she has a speech delay and that may not be something that will come straight away. But if I have language to say how I feel, then my behavioural will be less destructive. And that can be done through stories, through trying to talk about characters in books who get angry and frustrated, trying to use literature, using movies, videos, TVs. A great example of that is that movie Inside Out, where they have the template of emotion to watch that. Obviously, 2-year-old's too small, but as children get older and they're struggling to find articulation for emotion, that's a lovely template to try and use to have a conversation about what's it like to feel angry and sad at the same time. But in this case, I think it's very young to be doing too much about it. Reward the victim, disengage from the aggressor in this situation, and I wouldn't be worrying about it for some time yet.
Okay, you are though, you seem concerned about the speech delay, and that is somewhere where you think you would be continuing to direct your attention.
I think children who don't have words struggle, and they struggle with their behaviour, and oftentimes I know lots of young people who would have gotten in lots of problems in school and things like that because they just might have struggled with a learning difficulty that wasn't picked up. And so, I remember one lad who used to be thrown out of class all the time, and it used to be always on a Friday before the spelling test. And he made this poignant sentence to me. He said, "Coleman, I'd prefer to be known as a clown than a tick." And it was that notion that, I'd prefer to be misbehaviour than to be exposed for what I don't know. And sometimes when we don't have words and others do, it makes us feel completely inferior. And so our actions can be quite over the top or seem extreme to others who don't understand that.
Okay. This next one is about an imaginary friend. My 7-year-old has an imaginary friend, which in the beginning was sweet, but now she is using this as an excuse not to do things. She won't eat because Sadie isn't hungry yet, and she wants to wait for Sadie to eat. Sadie isn't tired, so she puts up a fight at bedtime. Sadie needs a car seat, so won't she want to sit in hers. Sadie can't go to the playgroup. She doesn't want to go. I feel she has an answer for everything. It all comes down to Sadie. I lost my temper one day and I said, "Sadie is not real," and stopped mentioning it. She got very upset by this. It's great she has an imagination, but where is the limit? How do I get her to do what she should and not what Sadie does? Should we try and make her forget about her imaginary friend? I just don't know what the best thing to do is. Her older brother didn't have an imaginary friend, so I don't know what to do.
Yeah, this is a really difficult one for parents, the imaginary friend. Some parents immensely comfortable with that, others less so. You'd assume that the imaginary friend is a culmination of some child's loneliness or social difficulties. All the research suggests it's not. About 37% of children will have some experience of an imaginary friend, whether it be in an object like a toy or a personified image or in their own head. So the children use this as a way of kind of managing transition, sometimes as a management of entertainment, and sometimes it's just a creativity within themselves that they like to have this other world in which to live in. There's no suggestion that they're in any way unhelpful or unhealthy, and so they're not something that you need to discourage. However, in this situation, this child is using Sadie as a means to check out misbehaviour.
Yeah, a very convenient little friend, I would say.
And that's not unusual in the imaginary friend world, that the I can't give Auntie Mary a lift because Sadie has her car seat. And that indulging in it to that extent is not helpful. You would sanction the imaginary friend the same way you sanction your own child. So if you come in and say, "I don't care who spilt that yop on the floor, you're going to clean it together."
Yeah.
That's a very understandable response. That's not challenging the existence of the child's creation, but it is showing them that there's not a way of getting around sanction. I think this child is testing where the limit is. So it's normally a child of that age.
They will
push it to where the line is. And in my own case, I remember my mother had a look. And when that look came, you knew that was it. And that there was the line there. So you went right to the line. Whereas this child might have the confidence to do that, or may have the convenience of Sadie to go to the line first and see what sanction would be coming if I did this. It doesn't mean she wants to be bad. It's just her exploring her world through the words of Sadie. But right. I would certainly be limiting it and disciplining Sadie in the same way as...
So basically Sadie lives under the same rules as absolutely. Every other child in the
absolutely.
House. Right,
absolutely.
Right, and does and goes to bed
I knew
time.
One parent who said, well, I'm going to ring the equivalent to Sadie's mom.
Yes.
Which, but it's trying to get that balance between not indulging this as a way of getting out of your responsibilities in the way in which you should behave, but not crushing on the child's imagination and dreams either, because there's nothing to suggest that this is in any way problematic.
Okay. I like the idea that every child has built within them something that can drive their parent to breaking point, and that they, you know, they're just wondering, where is that breaking point?
Oh yeah, and their task is to find it repeatedly.
God almighty. I have an idea where my breaking point is.
But the key of managing parenting well is having the same breaking point.
Right. Do they really want to take me there? Do they really want to see that side of me? We are having an issue with our six-year-old. For the last 3 months, every night, we are involved in a struggle to get her to bed. She says she is frightened and doesn't want to be on her own. I believe this in the beginning, as I researched it in articles, did say this age group in particular are very active imaginations, particularly at night time. I've tried a rewards chart, which did work for about 2 weeks, and then she just reverted back to the way she was, night after night. I tried notes from the fairy in her fairy door, special cuddly toy for her to stroke when she gets scared, all to no avail. Lately, I've tried the approach of going into her every 5 minutes, even though I stretched it to 10. This worked for 2 days, but again, she won't do it now. I found myself getting annoyed at her, which is not the type of parent I want to be. But I'm at my wit's end. It is as if she is a different child at night time. Please, can you help me with any advice? I don't know where to turn. She is exhausted. We are too. And it's beginning to affect our working life.
Yeah, again, everything's more difficult to manage at nighttime.
Yeah.
So your patience is more compromised, etc. But this girl's six. It's happening for a couple of months. I wonder if the summer has thrown her out of sync a little bit. Maybe her routine has been a little bit thrown. And children's, you know, with that circadian rhythm, once that gets thrown out, can be difficult to reset it. The good thing here is that when this child is coming in and saying, you know, there's a monster under my bed, mum is not saying, hop into my bed. Because when you do that, although you might get a quiet night's sleep, you're telling the child there is a monster under your bed. So by encouraging her to stay in a room and go back, although it's more labour intensive, is probably the right thing to do. What I'm interested in here is, why did these reward charts work for 2 weeks and not work after that point? And again, I go back to the idea of how we execute these. If you have these exceptional prizes in the first 2 weeks, you'd be broke by week six. So it's important to grade your rewards. If it's not incentive based, it needs to be energised. So most of the reasons why these charts kind of fall apart is because parents, it's on the fridge for the first 2 weeks and everyone's excited about it, and then everyone kind of loses its lull, and sometimes it can lose its effectiveness. A quick win on this, I would suggest, and I had a little lad who couldn't sleep himself, and I bought a little book which is called The Rabbit Who Wants to Fall Asleep, and it's a lovely book where you read, and as you're reading it, it tells you at which points to whisper, to raise your voice, and it's about a rabbit getting tired and tired and tired, and it's just this lovely kind of preparation to, if you can stay awake as a parent reading it, it's a task in itself.
Even when you're starting to lower your voice there, I felt my head falling forward. I think
something like that, just try and get this kid's rhythm back in. It's a lovely, easy way of spending time with a kid.
That definitely isn't a boundary issue, this, isn't it? When I was reading it, I was thinking, you know, the struggle, it just doesn't want to go to bed, and this is where the boundary is being kind of explored.
I mean, I think from the point of view of I'm not wanting to go to bed, it's usually because I'm not asleep or I'm not tired.
Yeah.
And there's the scary bad dreams, other stuff can be kind of the tummy pains, I need a drink, I'm thirsty. These are kind of attempts to stay up. But I think that that technique of staying with her and coming in every 10 minutes and weaning yourself off her is perfectly acceptable too.
Okay.
But if it's not working, you need to try something different.
I have one more great one that I have echoes on. I've skin in, I think is the phrase for this. You know, this
skin
is ringing,
in the game.
This is ringing bells in my world again. This may seem trivial, but my 14-year-old is obsessed brushing her hair. It delays us going anywhere. She needs to spend time brushing it. This can last 20 to 30 minutes at a time. On a few occasions, she'll get worked up that her hair isn't right and refuse to leave the house. Even before getting out of the car can be an issue. We can be sitting in the car for 15 minutes before she feels she's ready. I tell her hair is perfect, but not in her eyes. Her behaviour seems obsessive to me. Am I jumping the gun here? And is she just being a typical teenager?
It doesn't sound typical. It seems a little bit more excessive than that. I mean, how you judge something to be problematic is how much it impairs your functioning. So if this child is being late for things, is not able to get through the day without being... Like, you... I don't mean to pathologize, but there's a condition called body dysmorphia disorder where somebody becomes obsessed about a certain part of their body.
Yeah.
And that becomes the kind of everything gets, all their anxieties get channeled through this, whether it be their nose, their hair, their ears, their eyes. And they'll have these excessive grooming rituals in order to conceal whatever it is they don't want. There's an outside chance this is something,
yeah,
an early stage of that. But from the point of view of, you know, if you look at ads, we've become so, like, to hair products now, you'd need a science degree to understand how to manage them. You know, we've become more focused on those things. That's kind of a construction that I think teenagers are bought into. But it sounds to me that there's something else at play, that this child is anxious and worrying. And, you know, using your hair, it's another condition called trichotillomania, where children pull out their hair,
yeah,
strand by strand, which is, again, a kind of an obsessive compulsive symptom. Wouldn't over-pathologize it. If there's other areas of her life that she's absolutely fine in, it wouldn't worry too much. But if it's edging into different levels of anxiety in different spots, she might need some help.
Okay. I think the only skin I really had in that game was that my 11-year-old has gone into needing to be ready to go out, which is new.
Okay.
She never cared less before. But now suddenly a new thing has arrived, which is we have to wait a while until she's ready to go out.
And they don't grow out of that one, I don't think.
No, I don't think that's just the beginning. That's just the future has arrived. That's all that is. Colm, thanks very much for that. An absolute pleasure talking to you.
Parenting on Moncrief. Thanks to Five Rivers Fostering. Recruiting and supporting foster parents and children. Fiverriversfostering.ie